Members of the committee, members of the audience, we're going to convene our meeting at this time. Representative Dabney, we'll be beginning with your bill. All right, it'll be first on the agenda. Members, as we come together this morning to continue the work we've been doing, deliberating on state policy when it comes to K-12 education, and the world around us continues to move on, right? And you know, as the world moves forward, you know, it's we're constantly reminded of both the joys and the incredible tragedies that are faced by people constantly. And of course, here, right in our backyard, we have family, brothers and sisters, in heart and spirit, who are suffering gravely due to incidents yesterday. So at this time, I'd just like us to pause for a moment with bowed heads, and offer a time of thoughtful reflection and personal prayer for the children and the adults, the friends and the families of the victims of this most recent tragedy. So if you would please bow your heads. Dear Lord God, all-powerful and mighty, we stand in awe of your awesome power. Today, as we come together to deliberate, to debate, to look at issues with education, let us also remember in our hearts, in our minds, in our prayers, and in our souls, the families, the victims, the friends of those in the Red Lake Reservation who are experiencing such awful tragedy. We look at things in front of us sometimes, and our first reaction is that they are incredibly senseless, and yet we know, Lord, that you have reasons for all that confront us. Help us today to move forward with kindness for all we meet as we keep in our thoughts and prayers the victims. Thank you for allowing us to come together this morning and to share this thought and prayer with you. Amen. Thank you. Members, do we have a quorum? At this time we have a quorum, so I'm going to officially convene the meeting. Members, in your packet is our agenda for today. We will move a little bit around on the agenda. If you want to take that out and mark very quickly the order of the bills that we'll heard, we have Representative Daphne at the table in front of us. His bill will be the first in order today. We'll follow that with Representative Erickson's bill, Representative Sharon's bill, Representative Quinson's bill, and House File 1718 will not be before us today, so you can scratch that bill. Representative Daphne, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning. Mr. Chair, I'd like to move my House File 1180 to be before the committee. We haven't had the opportunity to discuss its path yet, sir.
Representative Daphne, as has been, at least in my experience, custom that when we have bills that deal with contract, even if they're not specific financial bills, but at least they deal with contract, that the motion go to K-12 finance. So if you'd like to make that motion, Representative Dabney.
Certainly then, Mr. Chair, I'd like to move House File 1180 before the committee for recommendation to the K-12 Finance Committee.
Representative Dabney moves that House File 1180 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on K-12 Finance. Representative Dabney.
Took the words right out of my mouth, Mr. Chair. Good morning, committee members, and thank you for this opportunity to present this bill. The Minneapolis School District is facing a number of significant challenges. The committee has had the opportunity to review some of those even recently. Challenges such as declining enrollment leading to declining funding leading to further declining enrollment, that declining funding forcing deep teacher layoffs, and those layoffs forcing significant changes and disruption to school teams, school cultures, and to student-teacher relationships. At the root of the issue of these teacher layoffs, realignments, and school disruption is the provision in the Teacher Tenure Act, Minnesota Statutes 122A.41, and the years of case law that interpret it, that any layoffs must be done by department in the inverse order of hire. In other words, for last in, first out, a strict seniority system for layoffs. House File 1180 would change that. It amends Minnesota Statute 122A.41, allowing school boards and the exclusive representatives in cities of the first class to negotiate otherwise, to provide the local authorities the opportunity to develop latitude in how they lay off teachers in the event that funding demands it. In this ability, acted out at the local level, would allow school boards to enact provisions that focus on the educational needs of students, not just the hire date of teachers, and would allow teachers, working with parents, to develop and maintain choice programming, securing the knowledge that the investments of personal and community time, energy, and money would be protected. I have several testifiers here today. We'd like to start with Louise Sundin, president of the Minneapolis Federation of Teachers Local 59. In addition, Ms. Deanna Harder, who is a co-chair of Local 59 Staffing for Stability Task Force. We also have a parent from the Minneapolis Public Schools, Mary Ford.
Thank you, Representative Gavney. Your first testifier, Ms. Sundin, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate being back so soon. I also appreciate your remembering our colleagues and the students and all of the people that were affected by the great tragedy yesterday. Those of us who are in the education biz pray almost every day that not to have it happen here. It has happened here, and I think it's yet another wake-up call for all of us on how children are connected to schools and not allowed to be loners. I appreciate the opportunity again just very briefly to talk about our desire to not be singled out anymore, to not have the ability to have to negotiate with the district to do some things that probably would be more amenable to the education of children and for teacher desires and for parents in the school district. Right now we're restricted by the law we're under, the language of the law we're under, and a Supreme Court ruling. I do want to start by saying that in our contract under our transfer and reassignment policy, the preamble that we have negotiated with the district now says that its goal is to facilitate the best match possible of teachers and sites or programs seeking teachers, and that is our goal, so that the teachers and the sites can make a good match between the two of them, and that match is so important for the students' learning. But we have been challenged, as Representative Gavney has already mentioned, and you probably know some of, by both the history of student demographics over the last 4 years, teacher demographics, and the demographics of the funding. So I just want to incredibly quickly run through the student demographic changes. After the decade of the 90s, all of our student increase was in immigrant students. As of 2009-11, all of the door was shut on immigrant students, and so our immigrant student increase in population has gone down precipitously. As you know, the birth rate has gone down, not just here, but in many areas. We have an open enrollment policy, of course, in which we lose some kids, but what happened is that there was an NAACP settlement that has caused 1,500 kids out of the north side to leave the Minneapolis schools, and that's the equivalent of about 3 elementary schools. Then we have the option for charters, and in our district, they are single ethnic charters that families are opting for. I'm not sure what that does to the Democratic melting pot, but that's another agenda for another day. I hope you invite me back on that someday. And we have also the usual parochial, private, and homeschooling. With that, we have lost significant numbers of students over the last 4 years, and as a result of it, we have lost 1,000 teachers over the last 4 years. We have, if the board continues on its current path, we will have the challenge ahead of us to have another 300 possibly laid off this spring. Now, it's easy to grow a district. It's very hard to reduce and to have a district collapse as far as its staffing is concerned. Downsizing hurts. If downsizing hurts in the private sector, downsizing hurts in the public sector, and there is no easy way to downsize. There were, as last spring, we were faced with a large number of layoffs of tenured people. The tenured people was something that we really probably should have anticipated more, but did not. And I suppose we were like the proverbial frogs, since over the previous 4 years we had lost 1,000 teachers. We sort of didn't realize the water was getting as hot as it was, and we didn't leap out of the pot soon enough. But there were a couple of good things that happened as a result of the realignments and layoffs last spring, if there can be good of that, and that is that there were some very skilled, very experienced, very good classroom teachers who were realigned to special education. And special education needs good, experienced classroom teachers teaching in an area where they haven't had enough emphasis in that. The bad thing is that those teachers were overwhelmed by learning the paperwork and could spend no time with the students, just the paperwork. That's another agenda I hope we get a chance to talk about someday. There were a couple of bad things, and that is that rather than be realigned, some teachers chose to drop licenses. We feel that that shouldn't have to be. Teachers have spent a lot of time on licenses, gaining them, a lot of money, a lot of effort and time so that they could be better teachers. They shouldn't have to drop licenses in order to continue to teach in the area that they'd like to teach. We also are, however, going to face a similar challenge this spring, in which if we're going to have to lay off another 300 teachers, it's going to be a very wrenching time period for teachers and students and their families. So we're looking at an opportunity then so that we can, with the district, look at alternative measures to try to mitigate some of that pain and try to continue the relationships that have been built. The other good thing that happened is that, by accident in some ways, is that the highest need schools, the schools that are about on their furthest along the road of not making adequate yearly progress, are the schools that benefited last spring. And they benefited because for the first time in 4 years, they had the most stable staffing that they had had in four years. So where there was disruption in some schools where there are more experienced teachers by choice, there was more stability in schools which we consider high need schools or underperforming schools with the most challenging students. So that's another of the good sort of accidental happening. We have a demographic, a teacher demographic, that shows that the majority of our teachers, 85% of our teachers, have 20 or fewer years' experience. 90% of our teachers have 25 or fewer years of experience. We do not have a top-heavy staff. We do not have an overly experienced staff. I always tell everybody that I'm the only old fart left, and all the rest have retired. So we have a very young staff. and therefore we have challenges to not churn young staff. The big challenge for us is that how we provide the kind of stability that everyone seeks, how we try to find that stability, particularly for the high-need schools, and how we try to find that stability for teachers so that we don't lose the best and the brightest, who come to the city not for the benefits, not for the pay. We have had zero and zero increase for the last 2 years. Not for the pension, which is in serious problem. They come for the children. And so we want to help them to continue that opportunity and as the, for that career. It's going to be increasingly difficult to do that as we, unless we sort of put a package together where all of those things become brighter. So my our challenge is that we're seeking stability. Our challenge, however, also is it is very difficult to seek stability when we will continue to lose students until 2008-2009 school year. We are slated to lose over 1,000 middle grade students in the next each of the next 3 years. So our challenge will continue. We appreciate your consideration of this bill so that we can have the opportunity to deal at the table with these issues and not have the courts decide. And we also appreciate your willingness to help us look a little bit more like the rest of the school districts in the state. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Sundin. Ms. Sundin, Representative Dabney, and to all members who have bills today. In putting together our calendar, our schedule, and looking at the hearing requests and the estimated times, I think we can get done in this time slot, but we've got to stay very succinct and very specific in our testimony, all right? And so, welcome, Ms. Harder.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Brianna Harder, and I am a teacher at Patrick Henry High School. This is my sixth year as a teacher, all in Minneapolis, all at Patrick Henry. And right now, my students are discussing economics, and a lot of this has to do with economics, not only the dollar figures, but the cost-benefit analysis of looking at how we deal with transfer, reassignment, layoffs, and so forth. I'm excited to be able to talk today with this committee. I, as was earlier stated, am co-chair of the Minneapolis Federation of Teachers Union Task Force entitled Staffing for Stability. We had our first meeting last spring, and our goal was to look at the hiring placement and reassignment practices of our school district with the intention of trying to come to some creative ways to reform some of the policies and practices of the district to best respond to this ongoing crisis that Ms. Sundin spoke to. We addressed these policies in a variety of ways. We had an online survey. We spoke with members. We had focus groups led by Education Minnesota facilitators. And in the end, what we found is that stability, as is quite obvious, very, very important both to staff and to families in Minneapolis. Stability, those relationships between teachers and their students are critical to success in the classroom. And in this continued crisis, that stability is compromised in so many ways. We need to do better for our students and our families. Right now, though, our hands are tied by the Teacher Tenure Act and not allowing us the ability to negotiate transfer, reassignments, layoff, etc. What Mr. Dabney's bill, Representative Dabney's bill, does is give us options. Okay, we understand that the next several years are going to be tough, that each spring we kind of grit our teeth, bear down, and see how the cards are all going to fall out. But we can do better. And by passage of 1180, we have the option then to negotiate. Some of the things that we've talked about with the Staffing for Stability Task Force members and the membership include options such as mothballing a license. This is something that is in the Robbinsdale School District contract, wherein a teacher can decide to basically take an area of licensure off of the seniority list if they are not current in that area of licensure. We learned through the realignments that currency is incredibly important, not only to teachers but to success for the students in having a teacher who is current both in experience and in training in the area that they are teaching. It also allows us to negotiate the ability to keep teams, teaching teams together at sites, particularly sites that have seen in years past high turnover. So I think that the end goal in this bill is to give us options that will allow us to better support our students, to better support our families and communities, and in the end also to better support our teaching staff in Minneapolis.
Thank you. Ms. Ford.
Chairman Buskins, members of the committee, thank you. My name is Mary Ford. I'm a Minneapolis public school parent of two children. My husband is a public school teacher at St. Louis Park Junior High. I love one teacher in particular, my husband, and I care deeply about my children's teachers. My son, who is a senior teacher, a very experienced teacher, and my daughters, who is a junior teacher, who probably faces layoff this spring. In 4 years, the Minneapolis Public School District has cut more than $100 million from its budget and laid off more than 1,100 teachers. At our school, the carpet is unraveling, the paint is peeling, we don't have enough money for an assistant principal, and we don't have enough money for supplies. And this spring and summer, we will cut yet again. Our school board did, thank you, our school board did the right thing and the painful thing and closed 10 schools and is in the process of merging 17 more. We are reeling. And we are fighting to hang on. And parents are highly engaged. The passage of 1180 is an urgent and critical piece in beginning to stabilize our public schools. Please pass this bipartisan bill. The proposed negotiation language in 1180 is the most important legal language that would help the Minneapolis district now. It's about local control. With the new negotiation language of 1180, school sites can have a say in the kinds of teachers we need to hire and keep. Teachers, junior and senior, the best teachers, that match the needs of our students and the needs of our programs. In a recent union survey, Minneapolis teachers said that while seniority is still important, factors other than seniority, such as children's educational needs and the needs of school programs, should be taken into account when retention and layoff decisions are made. 1180 would give us new room to negotiate. Let's see, I'll skip a little bit here. I think the important part is the fact that teachers and parents both support this bill underscores its common sense credibility. Tonight we are holding a public forum in Minneapolis sponsored by Minneapolis Public School Parents. The main message that we are delivering is that we want all our leaders, our school board members, our superintendent, the Minneapolis legislative delegation, and our union officials to work together to help solve our instability problems. 1180 is the key to starting this process. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ford. We do have Representative Downey, one other person who's asked to testify, so I'd ask that Ms. Allswager, if you would come forward. Ms. Allswager, welcome.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Allswager, Education Minnesota. I'll just briefly state that Education Minnesota supports this bill. It is the right answer to the problem that we were discussing the other day with Representative Demersville.
Thank you, Ms. Allswager. Representative Abney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. to, in the interest of brevity, while there are representatives from several of the school districts that are affected by this bill in the room, I think I will simply state that this bill is supported by the Minneapolis-St. Paul and Duluth School Boards and the Minneapolis-St. Paul and Duluth Teachers Union Local.
Thank you. Members, I see no questions of to this bill. Representative Dabney, you've done a fabulous job, all right, in your presentation, and I thank you. So at this point, seeing no questions, Representative Dabney renews his motion that House File 1180 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Education Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed say no. Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Committee.
Moves forward. Thank you. Members, we are now moving to House File 969. Representative Erickson, welcome to the committee. Would you move your bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Committee. I'd like to move House File 969, recommended to pass once we amend it, and be referred to the Committee on Government Operations and Veterans Affairs.
Representative Erickson moves that House File 969 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Governmental Operations. Representative Erickson, you have an amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair and Committee, I'd like to move House File 969A1 amendment.
Representative Erickson moves the H0969A1 amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like to speak to it. Are there any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Motion prevails. The amendment is adopted. Representative Erickson, to the bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. House File 969 is amended. Would give direction to the Board of Teaching in consultation with the Department and the Minnesota Quality Teaching Coalition to adopt rules to create an interdisciplinary teaching license. As you know, hundreds of our teachers teach on waivers or variances. We need to allow the flexibility for school districts such as those that Representative Easton represents, for ALCs, of which I have been a teacher, and for our charter schools. We need that flexibility, and now is the time to do that. Here to testify in support of the bill is Steve Allen, who is the director of Oakland Alternative Learning Center in Cambridge, and who's one of my former bosses.
Welcome, Mr. Allen. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Steve Allen. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Representative Erickson. And thank you, committee members, for allowing me to attend today. I think it's important that we address this topic of interdisciplinary teacher license, and I'm here to speak on behalf of it. Over the past few years, we have worked very closely with the Board of Teaching, particularly with Mike Tillman and George Maurer, a couple of the past directors. We've worked with both these individuals in establishing program waivers for innovative programming and specialized licenses, such as the Community Expert License. As a representative of the Minnesota Association of Alternative Programs, I've served on two Board of Teaching committees. One was the General Academic Task Force, and the other was the Interdisciplinary License Committee. The Interdisciplinary License Committee was an attempt to work with both the Department and the Board of Teaching in response to the licensure requirements of No Child Left Behind. The Interdisciplinary License Committee met numerous times over the past couple of years with two fundamental recommendations coming from those meetings. The first was for the Department and the Board of Teaching to create a teacher of record model that would aid small alternative programs and small rural schools in licensing teachers. The second recommendation was to work with the legislature in establishment of an interdisciplinary teaching license. This is the reason that I'm here today. When I first started working with the Interdisciplinary License Committee, my primary focus was Nickleby. I was and am concerned with the ramifications that this law will have on small rural schools and small alternative schools. There's no way that small schools can or should hire highly qualified teachers for all the core subject areas.
For example, one of the programs that I supervise is a small alternative school for students who are going through chemical dependency treatment. What's important for these students at this time is to work with an academic generalist who understands the nature of chemical dependency and who can assist them with their schooling on an individual level. It is totally ridiculous to think that I will need to bring in a licensed teacher in each of the core subject areas. This is one small example that can be multiplied throughout the state of Minnesota. I am hopeful that the teacher of record model that the department is supposed to be developing will help solve some of these issues. However, as we moved to the interdisciplinary license committee, it became evident to me that the interdisciplinary teaching license would not only help deal with Nickleby, but it would also could also be a vehicle for innovation and reform, which this committee is all about. On page 18 of Breaking of Ranks, Strategies for Leading High School Reform, the authors make the following core recommendations. The high school will recognize the traditional department structure in order to integrate the school's curriculum to the extent possible and emphasize depth over breadth of coverage. The content of the curriculum, where practical, should connect to real-life application of knowledge and skills and help students link their education to the future. The high school will promote service programs and student activities as integral in an education providing opportunity for all students and support and extend academic learning. The interdisciplinary teaching license can be a catalyst to this level of change. We have come a long way in innovative programming in the state of Minnesota. The interdisciplinary teaching license can assist us in changing the role of the teacher and the learner. We have universities who are desiring to get on board with us in developing these teachers. Characteristics of highly qualified interdisciplinary teachers have already been identified. Some of these characteristics were developed by Ron Newell, the Learning Program Director for Edvision Schools. They include to be able to design interdisciplinary learning experiences that allow students to integrate knowledge, skills, and methods of inquiry across several subject areas. To collaborate with other professionals to improve the overall learning environment, to effectively utilize the local community as an extension of the classroom learning environment by identifying and using community resources to foster student learning. In an essay published in the winter of 99 in the problem log, Bernard Hollister quoted John Dewey by saying, "John Dewey told us, thinking is doing. And we must give learners the challenge of thinking, but also the challenge of doing something with their thinking." I believe that the interdisciplinary teaching license can help us get us out of the traditional box to do this. Thank you for allowing me the opportunity to speak to you today.
Thank you, Mr. Allen. Representative Erickson, we have listed another testifier, Ms. D. Thomas, but I'm not sure she's here. Do you see her?
Mr. Chair, she knew I had laryngitis, and so maybe she thought I wouldn't have a voice today, as I didn't have one yesterday.
All right. At this time, Ms. Allswiger, did you care to speak to this bill? Ms. Allswiger, welcome once again.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm just going to ask a question. We are really wondering why you would need an interdisciplinary teaching license, and that because that is more of a teaching method. And so we just have some questions, and rather than taking any hard position on it at this time, I think it would be best if we worked with the author of the bill and had some discussions.
Thank you, Ms. Allswiger. I think that's appropriate. The bill has a couple of more stops on its way, but Mr. Allen, you may want to address that right now, if you choose.
Mr. Chairman, committee members, when we were working with the Board of Teaching and the Department of Education last year, the Attorney General's Office, Representative Bernie Johnson, informed us that this is the vehicle that we needed to go. So it was this direction came to us from the Attorney General's Office.
All right. Thank you. Representative Erickson, to your bill as amended.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to renew my motion that House File 669 is amended, be recommended to pass, mm-hmm. and be referred to the Committee on Government Operations.
Representative Erickson, we do have one question. Representative Peterson.
What is the Minnesota Quality Teaching Coalition? I'm not acquainted with that group.
Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair and members, that's a coalition that deals with innovative programs.
With what?
With innovative programs. It is a group of the charter school, charter school organizations that formed this coalition to discuss quality teaching.
Can I follow up?
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I assume that the Board of Teaching is simply consulting with the two groups. They still are making the final decision regarding the rules, right?
Representative Harrison.
Mr. Chair and Representative Peterson, yes, the Board, in consultation with the Department, because the Department will have the data on the number of variances and waivers and have more of a direct link with alternative schools and this coalition. Okay. So the Board will adopt the rules. They will consult with these other two organizations.
Okay. Representative Peterson.
Thank you.
Right. Representative Flats.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Erickson, just as a follow-up, have we in the past directed the Board of Teaching to consult with any particular non-governmental organization as a part of our legislative mandate in preparing rules?
Representative Erickson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Lacks, as I read through the legislation that we now have, no, we have not named a particular organization.
Ms. Larson, do you have any recollection where statute has asked consultation of any non-governmental entity in the past?
Mr. Chairman, members, particularly when we have non-coded advisory committees and we wish the legislature to learn about particular ideas, we have listed various entities, but they're ordinarily not codified, and they're usually in an advisory capacity for a report or some similar kind of result.
Representative White.
If I'm understanding your language correctly, Ms. Larson, then what's in the bill here would not be considered a non-coded advisory capacity, right? It'd be a different kind of mandate?
Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Lacks, yes.
Representative Lacks.
Mr. Chairman, I'd be more comfortable with this, especially as the rulemaking process allows everyone to have input and the Board of Teaching to consult with whomever they wish to consult. I'd be more comfortable not setting a precedent by identifying a private non-governmental agency in statute for them to consult with. Just if we were to delete the mandate that they consult with the Minnesota Quality Teaching Coalition.
Okay. Representative Watts, are you making a motion?
Yes, I am.
Representative Watts moves that on page 3, line 29, that we strike the words "and Minnesota Quality Teaching Coalition." Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps if Representative Erickson is interested in having representatives of charter schools also consult with the department, that might be an alternative that perhaps would be acceptable to Representative Lack, I don't know, but to simply say in consultation with the department and representatives of charter schools, since they are acknowledged entities under statute.
Representative Flats.
Yeah, I'm fine with that.
Representative Flats, would you incorporate that change into your amendment?
Yes, I do.
All right. Representative Flats moves to amend House File 969 as amended to say, Ms. Larson, could you repeat that, please?
Mr. Chairman, on the amendment H0969A1, page 1, line 5, delete the. Page 1, line 6, delete Minnesota Quality Teaching Coalition and insert and representatives of charter schools.
Representative Gammer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a question about the last part, the representatives of charter schools. Who would that be? How are we defining that? And I guess I don't follow who the department or who the board would contact about. Would they just randomly select some school board members off charter schools? Would they? Can we get a little more clarification on what a representative of charter schools would be, Mr. Chair?
Thank you, Representative Demmer. I think right now it's fairly open-ended, and I'm going to ask the author if she feels comfortable with that, and that it being open-ended, she feels comfortable that who would be contacted would be an organization that would typically speak for charter schools, such as MAX, Education Evolving, et cetera. Representative Erickson, to the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair and members, I would prefer that the amendment read, delete the Minnesota Quality Teaching Coalition and insert representatives of innovative schools and programs.
All right. Well, we have Representative Latz's amendment before us right now. All right. Representative Latz's amendment deals or asks specifically that there be consultation with representatives of charter schools. Representative Erickson sounds like she would be amenable to removing the Minnesota Quality Teaching Coalition, but she would like to broaden the consultation to more than just charter schools. All right. So, at this point, all right, we have Representative Latz's amendment before us. All right, Representative Latz, you've heard the discussion. What are you thinking?
Mr. Chairman, I think the phrase innovative schools and programs or something like that is so ambiguous as to be meaningless. I think every school would say in some way they consider themselves to be innovative. It might just be cleaner since every school organization or anyone else who wants to can participate in the rulemaking process by submitting suggestions and written testimony or evidence or anything that they want in that rulemaking process. I'm sure that the teaching board will consult widely and review everything they feel they need to review in order to make a decision on this. I think it might be easier just to have nothing there in terms of mandating consultations except with the Department of Education. But if we want to identify charter schools, that's fine because, as Ms. Larson indicated, that is a recognized entity under Minnesota statute. Innovative schools and programs, as far as I'm aware, is not recognized as any specific entity or group of entities, organizations in Minnesota statute. I think it'd end up being meaningless.
Okay.
And I'm not quarreling with the goal of having all of this input in the rulemaking process or necessarily with the goal of the legislation. I'm just worried a little bit about opening up a Pandora's box here if we start mandating consults with individual groups.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would agree with Representative Latz because I would think that the alternative schools, we have many of those, and they need the same kind of license, and many of our high schools also have interdisciplinary programs. So I think if we start listing all of these entities that probably should have input, we're going to have a very long list, probably leave some out. So it seems like the rulemaking process would accommodate all of the kinds of input that would be needed in this license.
Representative Erickson.
Well, Mr. Chair, maybe you want to vote on the amendment, and then I'll offer my own.
All right. Representative Latz's motion before us, all right, is let's go through one more time, Ms. Larson. I don't have it written in front of me. Representative Latz's motion is.
Well, you caught yourself this time.
All right, Ms. Larson. Ms. Larson. Yes, Representative Crowley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Larson, did you catch Almanac on Friday night? Well, try to watch a rerun and you'll feel better.
Ms. Larson, I do feel honored that you are recognizing my soft and feminine style. I get accused of not having one, so it is nice to know that it is recognized. Ms. Larson.
Mr. Chairman, members, on the document H0969A1, page 1, line 5, delete the page 1, line 6, delete Minnesota Quality Teaching Coalition, and insert the representatives of charter schools.
Members, at this point, we're going to vote on the motion. If the motion prevails or fails, I think either way, Representative Erickson will be bringing forth another motion to the same item. So, motion before us. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no.
No.
The motion does not prevail. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And in a moment, Renee Hasbargen, representing the NREA, will offer testimony. I would suggest, again, that we delete the Minnesota Quality Teaching Coalition and insert representatives of innovative schools and programs as determined by the board.
Mr. Chairman?
Excuse me, Representative Watt.
If in the forthcoming testimony, or if Representative Erickson could give us some detailed list then of who the Minnesota Quality Teaching Coalition is, at least this committee would know what it is that we are mandating, or who it is that we are mandating the department or the board to consult with before we vote on that question.
Ms. Hasbargen.
Mr. Chairman and members, Renee Hasbargen with the Minnesota Rural Education Association, which is a coalition of 150 school districts in greater Minnesota. This is my first chance to be in front of this committee, and some of you are new and probably don't know me. You have in your packet a piece that was put out by a coalition of organizations that call themselves a quality teaching coalition. Now, mine is manila colored, but yours is white, I believe. But it should look like this. And I believe the page had it earlier this morning. Oh, it's being passed out right now.
While that's being passed out, then Ms. Hasbargen.
May I? Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. You're going to receive a lot of pressure today, strongly encouraging you not to do this bill. And we would argue that this bill is essential. And it's essential to our rural school district's future, but it's also essential to your schools. And I'd like to just quickly point out three things about why it's essential. First of all, for our schools that are small, growing very much smaller because of declining enrollment, and are remote, often sparse, in sparse areas of the state, as our sites get smaller and smaller, we need this kind of interdisciplinary licensure to help us become more efficient in the way we deliver instruction for the students there. And our vision is simply that the content will be delivered online or by video conference from an originating site where you'll have a content specialist, let's say in physics. And then at the school site where the student is, you will have an interdisciplinary teacher who's facilitating the learning with a group of students that might all be studying something different. So for us, it'll allow us to become more efficient in the way we use our staff. The second point I want to bring up has to do with, this bill is also essential to you and to the state as we look at high school reform. Because the whole push behind high school reform is to take big sites and to make them smaller and more personal. And as we do that, we're going to need teachers delivering instruction differently in the metro area as well as in rural Minnesota. This isn't just a rural issue. But the final point I want to make, you discussed in your first days here of the session, and it has to do with where kids are going in Minnesota due to choice or because of other education programs. And you had a piece in front of you that talked about the how many kids are going to different choice programs, post-secondary, college and schools, open enrollment. But look at when we got over to alternative programs, the number of students in 03-04, 155,000 students. That number has doubled in the last 7 years. Kids are walking. And this number is 4 times more than all the kids who do open enrollment in the state. It's 9 times more than the number of kids in charter schools and in homeschools. 9 times more than are in homeschools. And that's where this coalition comes in. Because this coalition is made up of rural schools. It's made up of alternative programs. Those schools. We're the ones. It's the online learning programs. We're the ones that desperately need this kind of licensure if we're going to be successful in the future. And I would just maintain to you, with 155,000 students in alternative schools in the state, you have a huge interest in making sure they're well served by the kind of licenses that the teachers have in those schools.
Thank you. Are there any questions for the committee from Ms. Hasbargen? Representative Garland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Hasbargen, is this handout that you gave us the answer to my last question, or are there others in the coalition as well? We have the four groups and then the individuals on the last page.
Ms. Hasbargen.
Madam, Mr. Chairman and Representative Garland, as far as I know, this is the coalition, but there might be. Yes, this is the coalition. Oh, okay. Somebody else could probably better speak to that, but Representative Erickson has pointed out that there are higher ed is also represented in the text of your document on the last page, page 4, the beginning of the last full paragraph.
Are there further questions? Okay. Members, we have an amendment before us. It's an amendment by Representative Erickson. And I believe I have it correct. It is on page 3, line 29, to delete "and Minnesota Quality Teaching Coalition" and insert "representatives of innovative schools and programs as determined by the board." All those in favor of that amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. Are there any further questions to House File 969 as amended? Seeing none, Representative Erickson renews her motion that House File 969 as amended be recommended pass and be re-referred to the Committee on Governmental Operations. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. The motion prevails. The bill is passed. Thank you, Representative Erickson. Members, we now move on to House File 1945. Representative Sharon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Sharon, will you move your bill to Education Finance?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move that House File 1945 be approved and sent on to Education Finance.
Representative Sharon moves that House File 1945 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Education Finance. Representative Sharon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this bill would simply clarify existing language for charter schools sponsors regarding their oversight, roles, and responsibility, and also regarding sponsorship termination procedures. With me today to testify on this bill is Mr. Bob Wadle. Mr. Wadle is the former Commissioner of Education under Governor Carlson and is now currently the Director of the Sponsors Network for Charter Schools.
Mr. Wadle, Commissioner Wadle, welcome to the committee.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's always good to be back with you. For the record, I am Bob Wadle. I currently am Director of the Minnesota Sponsors Network for the sponsors of charter schools. And just 30 seconds on that. What we do is we provide direct assistance to the sponsors of charter schools. We don't directly work with the schools themselves. Of course, we do incidentally. But we provide individual assistance to the sponsors of schools to help them improve how they provide oversight of the schools that they for whom that they are sponsoring. We're a relatively new group, so we are working feverishly to improve the role of the sponsor. And in that light, I'd like to speak in support of the five amendments, and I'll do so very briefly. The first one, which your bill summary titles the formation of a school, at the present time when a sponsor makes a decision that it is going to sponsor a school, it of course does a review of that school, and then it submits an affidavit to the commissioner. And in that affidavit, it includes the usual parts of a school, who the school is going to serve, how many kids, what the objectives are, how it's going to be financed. What this bill does is it adds a provision to that. It says that in addition to explaining the school, the sponsor should also explain how it is going to provide oversight of that school. So that's the amendment. That's the first amendment. The second one that your bill summary calls a contract. After the school is approved and it's approved by the commissioner and it's getting ready to start up, there's a contract developed between the sponsor and the school and the board of the charter school. And that contract lays out what are the student performance expectations, et cetera, et cetera. So all of the provisions in the contract are what the school is going to do. We're proposing that part of that contract lay out what the sponsor is going to do. So it expands then that contract to not only identify what the school is supposed to do, but also what the sponsor is going to do. The third part of the bill is called a review and comment is purely technical. It takes a sentence from subdivision B and puts that same sentence in subdivision A. So that's all that does. The fourth provision, which the summary relates refers to causes for non-renewal or termination of a charter school. Right now, the statute lays out a very defined and very good process for how a sponsor would terminate a school when that school is not meeting the student performance expectations or when there are financial problems or for other violations of law. And we don't have any proposals to modify that. We strongly support that. But there is no provision in law that says, well, what if after a 3-year contract period, the sponsor simply doesn't want to sponsor you anymore? You're fine as a school. There's nothing wrong. But we simply aren't going to continue sponsoring. Or the school says, we really would like to move to a different sponsor that's probably more aligned with our mission. There's no provision for doing that other than terminating the contract. And so all this does is it lays out a process for the transfer of sponsorship from one sponsor to another. It says you need to provide notice. Whichever party wants to discontinue the sponsoring arrangement, and the commissioner ultimately approves that. So that's basically what the fourth provision includes. And then the fifth one, request the department in cooperation, of course, with charter schools and sponsors to lay out some better guidelines in terms of what should the evaluation and oversight process include, and then also what should sponsors be able to charge in terms of fees to the schools that they sponsor. There is a provision for fees in current law. We think it's time to take a look at that and make some recommendations with regard to the fee structure. So those are really the five provisions in the bill, and the sponsors network strongly supports them.
Thank you, Commissioner. Are there any questions, members of the committee? Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How often do charter schools discontinue being a charter? Or the sponsors? Does that happen frequently, or do sponsors get disinterested and become disinterested frequently? Or
Mr. Chairman, it does happen. There have been a couple of changes from a school from one sponsor to another sponsor, and there's been some confusion as to how that should work. There are many sponsors that only sponsor one school, for example. And when they got into the sponsoring, they weren't quite sure what their role was. Now that they're in it, they're saying, well, maybe this is not what we ought to be doing, but yet there's not a defined process for how do we move out of it. So that's the purpose of it.
Seeing no further questions, Representative Sharon, any final comments?
No, Mr. Chair, I just urge support.
All right. Representative Sharon renews his motion that House File 1945 be recommended to pass and be referred to the Committee on Education Finance. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. The motion prevails. The bill is passed. Thank you, Representative Sharon. Members, to the last bill on our docket, Representative Quinzing. Get on early. Representative Quinzing, welcome. Would you move your bill?
I'd like to move House File 1719 to be before the committee to be discussed and hopefully pass its recommendation to be referred to Government Ops.
That is correct. Thank you. Representative Clinton moves that House File 1719 be recommended pass and be referred to the Committee on Governmental Operations. Representative Clinton, to your bill.
Members, I've been a public school teacher in the high schools for 12 years, teaching a lot of 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th graders, and striving to try to provide them with as much college preparatory curriculum as possible. And that goes for the kids, not just in the AP classes. But I noticed that there are a lot of kids maybe who should be in the AP classes or the IB programs that are truly college preparatory. I was always helped trying to get as many kids into those programs as possible. We see a need right now to send more kids to college to get the job that they're really going to need to raise a family. They're going to have to complete college. You're going to receive some articles that were in the Star Tribune and the Pioneer Press this past weekend. One from Bill Gates also stating that our fourth graders are among the top in the world, and that's not just for Minnesota, but certainly Minnesota is one of the top five when it comes to fourth graders performing academically, but our 12th graders are near the bottom. There's something about our high school system that's not preparing kids for college. And so what this bill proposes to do is to try to encourage high schools to get more kids prepared for college. They're certainly preparing some kids for college, and some kids are going on and doing fabulously. But at least a third of them are requiring college remediation once they do get to college. And only about a quarter of the ninth graders currently, about 25 out of 100, are actually making it through college within 6 years after graduating from high school. So it's not as many as are going to need to make it through college that quickly in order to be able to provide for their families and good paying jobs. So what this bill is trying to encourage schools and help schools provide more college preparatory curriculum to a broader base of students. So the first thing it does is it phases out the basic skills tests, which really are only measuring kids' ability in math and reading at the 8th grade level. And it phases in the MCA2s, which is a slightly more rigorous test and definitely aligned with the new high school standards, not just aligned with 8th grade reading and math standards like the old basic skills tests. The educational, the E-Pass is also something that will be encouraged with this legislation. It will allow districts and charter schools to participate in the E-Pass program, which is a program that tests kids in grade 8 and grade 10. And that E-Pass test is aligned with the ACT test. So it helps kids at an earlier age start understanding and gearing up for what the ACT test is going to test them on. Because that ACT test score, as many of you know, is a huge entrance criteria for most colleges across the United States. So this is going to help some of those students who haven't had a lot of exposure to what it's going to take to pass the ACT start to practice taking that test in the schools. And the department's going to help the districts and schools pay for and facilitate that. The advanced placement courses are always a huge indicator of how of students who are going to do well in college. Those who take AP tests tend to do very well in their college coursework. And some students have even found out that they can get college credit by taking AP classes and IB classes. And so what this bill proposes, this legislation, proposes supporting teachers who choose to teach these upper-level courses, which are a lot more preparation, a lot harder to teach in some ways, and includes sometimes out-of-state travel and special preparation because these AP and IB curriculum courses are very specific and do require specific training. So this would subsidize some of that training and also subsidize the test examination fees, first for kids who can't afford them, and then there'll be, if there's any money left, for those kids who can maybe afford those. And then there would also be, there is encouragement in this bill, which is one reason that we'll have to go to the Higher Ed Committee, to have the University of Minnesota and Minsky Schools recognize AP and IB courses and credits that are earned at the high school level. A lot of the schools already do, but to have some consistency across the state and get some commitment from higher ed to be with us as high schools on getting as many kids the motivation and the reward for putting that hard work in high school so it can pay off in their college level, we hope will be a big incentive for the students. Also, this legislation allows students to complete undergraduate coursework while in high school and receive college credit if they perform satisfactorily on the college-level examination program tests. And the state would, as it would do with AP and IB credits and tests, would reimburse exam fees with priority given to low-income students. That pretty much summarizes the main pieces of what this bill is doing to try to encourage more college preparatory coursework and incentive in the high schools for students and to help them take advantage of the college preparatory classes that will hopefully keep them out of the remedial courses in college and give more kids the tools they need to actually get into college.
Thank you, Representative Quinzing. Representative Quinzing, I have four people on the list who have asked to testify, two members from the department, a testing consultant, and a superintendent at NOCA Hennepin. So make our testimony brief. We can get to the questions, particularly of the latter two, all right? And I know the assistant commissioner and commissioners may be able to come back this evening if we need to, but I'd like to make sure we get the other two to the table before this evening. All right. So at this time, Assistant Commissioner Olson or Nelson, who would like to speak first? Assistant Commissioner Olson, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members. As you know, from my previous visits to this committee this session, I'm really excited about the way the department is going with the assessment system, and this bill provides me an opportunity to talk about a couple more pieces of how this fits together with our whole coherent whole of our assessment system. When NCLB was first authorized The state began developing tests for grades 4, 6, and 8 so that we would be compliant with a whole system. And discussion began then about what was the appropriate future for the basic skills test. The basic skills test currently tests at about the 6th grade level. As we look at this, is this really the message that we want? Is are we saying that, you know, the 6th grade level is appropriate for a high school graduation, for a diploma, or to at least prove that students are ready to go on? After a lot of discussion with stakeholders groups and other interested parties, a lot of research and exploring what other states were doing, the technical aspects, the department recommends a methodology that will use the high school MCAs, grades 9, 10, and 11, for not only the NCLB and state accountability, but also for graduation requirements. In addition, this ties in beautifully with what our state is going for with the Get Ready, Get Credit, which is kind of a summary handout that you received, and the governor's initiative for high school reform. How would this work? Would we require the same cut for the accountability and the graduation? No. The MCAs, a subset of items would be identified that are appropriate for us, for our expectations of those that are ready to go on to post-secondary ed, to get a job, become contributing citizens. And we would also include a subset of enabling items, those skills that might be cumulative, might have been from earlier grades, but that we want to make sure that the students have mastered. This is a similar model to what the state of Massachusetts is using, and it has been effective there. It will also provide us an opportunity for some more useful information for higher ed, especially when we tie it in with the EPAS system. But I'll wait on that discussion so that the consultant has an opportunity to tell you a little bit more about the transitioning of the BST to the MCAs for graduation requirement. Dr. Susan Phillips is the consultant we've used in the state. She's the one that a year ago kind of conducted an audit of our assessment system. We had her concentrate on the MCAs at that time, and she now has completed a look at the BST program and has some recommendations for its future. Dr. Phillips?
Welcome to the committee. State your name for the record, please, and you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Susan Phillips. I am an independent consultant in the area of assessment law. And as you've already heard from the others, this bill is very timely in light of the national and state focus on high school reform. And one component of ensuring post-secondary readiness and workplace readiness is raising expectations. And the proposal to replace the basic skills test with the Minnesota Comprehensive Assessments Part 2 will definitely raise the expectations from a pre-high school level to high school academic content. I have reviewed the plan that has been put forward by the department. I have found it a very thoughtful consideration of the important policy issues that we did identify in this review that Dr. Olson talked about, particularly in light of psychometric and legal defensibility of the program as a graduation testing requirement. And so I am here today to support and endorse this plan and to answer any questions you may have.
If you'd remain on deck, we'd like to finish the testimony and then we'll take questions from members.
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Commissioner Olson.
Mr. Chairman, the next part of this bill introduces the Educational Planning and Assessment System, which is part of the ACT assessment system. This would be a voluntary assessment that is given at grades 8 or 10. Currently, about 40% of the students in the state actually take the grade 10 test. This test affords the student a chance to see how they're doing. Are they on target for post-secondary ed, for being able to do well on the ACT assessment? In addition, those that participate will be able to compare their EPAS scores with the MCAs, and we'll be able to do some research and actually predict early on how students will do on the MCAs. Also, it will provide us a chance to work with higher ed to perhaps be able to use the MCAs as a placement test in college. I know that's something that they've been interested in. The plan is for any districts that wish to participate that the state will pay for the assessments for those students in grades 8 and grade 10. One of the advantages of this is that the reports that come from ACT on the scoring of this take a look at how the student's doing. The student reports what they kind of like to do. Are they going to college? What is their interest? And it'll take a look to see, to recommend their coursework in high school. It'll say a student who is interested in going to college usually takes these kind of classes in freshman year, these kind in sophomore and junior and senior. And it gives the student and the parent a chance to see if they're really on track, if they've gotten the right courses, and encourages them to take those more sophisticated courses.
Commissioner Nelson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in the interest of time, I'd like to point something out as I continue and we wrap this up. This handout is really developed for your use, and what it does is it takes the normally technical language of the bill and puts it in a document so that you can see questions relating to that language as well as our interpretation of what it means. So if, with your approval, I'm going to continue from where Pat left out. She covered the first 3-4 pages of that document. I am now on page 5 of this document handed out, and I'm just going to cover very briefly what's in the language. Bottom line, it extends AP-IB funding in school. We have had funding from the legislature since 1992 and impacted in the 1993 school year for students. And this appropriation, this bill would actually extend the funding and the support to schools for AP-IB testing. You will see there on page 5 in the middle the direct bill language that relates to subsidy for fees. As before, low-income students will have their fees for the AP test covered, and whatever is left over in the appropriation in a means determined by the commissioner will be also allocated as partial offset, partial reimbursement for other students, public and non-public, who take the exam. Moving on to page 6 of this document, you will see there in the middle, teacher stipends are referenced, and this bill will support the continuance and the restoration of teacher stipends for certain criteria scores received. College credit is a big deal. We will, with this bill that Representative Klinzing has, forge an agreement with Minsky colleges. They would be required to award credit, and University of Minnesota campuses would be encouraged. The next page, 7, college-level exam program, is a little different than APIB. However, like APIB, it is a challenging academic program designed to provide motivated students with college-level academic courses and credit. So on page 7 of this handout is the section called CLEP. You need one? We have another one here, Representative Dabney. our apologies. We should have made sure you had that. On page 7, Representative, is where we are. In the middle, it refers to CLEP. CLEP has been around for a long time. What this bill would do is rise it, put it to a higher level of visibility for students. And here's how it would work. Students who take a rigorous high school course can take the CLEP test immediately after the course. We hope in school district sites, those who choose to become an administration site, because the CLEP tests, unlike APIB, which are administered in May, CLEP tests are administered throughout the year. And so a student, by virtue of getting a certain criterion score on that CLEP test, could then earn college credit or advanced standing. And this bill would provide funding for low-income students to take the CLEP at no cost. The $55 cost would be paid by the state. So continuing forward, on page 8, the program structure is explained there, how it would work for students. Students would complete a course or more at their high school and then request to take the CLEP test. On page 8, there is reimbursement cited there in the bill language for examination fees. And students can receive reimbursement for up to 6 exams taken. What's interesting is there are 34 AP exams and there are 34 CLEP exams. And they are listed there. There are quite a few options for students. And bottom line on page 9, again, as with APIB members, we would this bill would require MNSCU to accept the credit based on a criterion score to be set, and universities would be encouraged. Bottom line in conclusion, I just wanted to hit a couple of things and get our testifiers up here. You have had in Minnesota for the last year hundreds of practitioners across the state participating in discussions about Minnesota high schools. Teachers, principals, curriculum directors, superintendents have been part of something coordinated by the department in cooperation with all ed orgs in Minnesota, and that's a collaborative initiative, how do we improve our high schools. The idea for expanding APIB, for funding for CLEP, for the EPOS system, actually came from people who went to summit meetings and discussed ideas and gleaned the best ideas from across the nation, and this makes many of us feel proud to see our practitioners come together in meetings and then their ideas are picked up by policymakers who say this makes sense. So the bottom line is you'll see on another handout a 2-page about data. Bottom line, the rigor of high school curriculum is the most important thing that determines not only a student's high school graduation, but their college degree success attainment. So this is indeed a very exciting thing. And with this, I'd like to call forward 2 witnesses, Mr. Chair. Superintendent Roger Giroux, superintendent from the Anoka Hennepin School District, and Barb DeMaster, who is the curriculum director of the St. Louis Park Public Schools. And they will give you brief testimony.
Ms. DeMasters, would you like to begin? Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chair and Committee, Barbara DeMasters, St. Louis Park Public Schools, Director of Curriculum and Assessment and Instruction. I have been to a number of meetings related to the high school initiative improvement, and what is supported in this bill, we definitely, as a district, and also as part of a collaborative, which is WEMEP, would definitely support the pieces of the bill. We are always looking for rigor for our students, particularly identifying earlier students of color, students of poverty, who sometimes slip through the cracks in terms of identification. And we feel that if we're looking at 8th grade and 10th grade, and we would strongly encourage our students to be involved with these EPAS, that would give us data then to direct or help them in making those choices for course type selection for the 9 through 12. And so we would definitely support pieces in this particular bill.
Thank you. Superintendent Giroux. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Roger Giroux. I'm superintendent of Anoka Hennepin Schools, and I'm a resident of Champlin, Minnesota. I, too, speak to the support of the bill with a couple of comments and perhaps cautions as well. First of all, I do think the bill provides excellent incentive and opportunities for students to reach for higher levels of excellence. And I'll recount the story. Our school district did not have an aggressive portfolio of advanced placement courses for our students for an international baccalaureate, but the board chose to make that a part of its initiatives, and so now we've gone from 4 to 13 and next year to 16 advanced placement courses in 24 to 36 months. And we'll have increased our participation by about 46%. We'll have the IB operational Champ Park High School the year after next. We're going through the training and the experiences now. We've reviewed our honors designations to ensure that they have a rigor to them and are worthy of that designation. And we've worked with our technical college programs, particularly the program up at the Anoka Technical College, to ensure that those programs, including the general ed components, have rigor to them and have meaning for post-secondary experience. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the incentives for students are good. We don't have the same level of testing as we do for participation. In fact, it's considerably less. And we would encourage the students to take those tests and try to achieve the scores that will get them the college credit. Finances can be a part of that. So if incentive can be provided to help cover the cost of that $60 or $80 test item, it provides some encouragement. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, just a couple of thoughts, if I could, very quickly. This bill's primary purpose is to provide incentive to students, and that's why it's easy to come up and talk to that. It has taken considerable effort on the part of the district to reorganize its resources in order to provide these programs and courses because they are generally lower incidence courses or they have an abundance of students beyond what they should for the teacher to be as effective as they can. And so if they're doing an AP course in English and Lit, and they're doing 36 students, and it's a writing course, they have a lot of writing and reading to do at high levels of excellence that should probably be addressed at lower levels of class size. But if you do that, you can't offer it and still keep your budget balanced. But nevertheless, we committed to our public and to others that as a board and as a district, we're going to improve the quality of our programs. And these are kind of the points I wanted to make. I stand for everything that Bill has, with a couple exceptions, and I've been in these discussions. I've really overused that term, reform. It gives the impression that the folks who've been working in the fields for years have somehow been delinquent, and those are the folks we rely on to actually get these things done. And so we've done, I think, sizable work in the last 24 to 36 months pursuing excellence, raising the achievement level and continuing to create opportunities for our students and choices for our students and parents. But we've been cautious not to call that a reform, and we've advised the governor even to say, don't blame that on folks. It seems like a negative connotation. If there's any way to avoid it, it helps. The second piece is a provision in the bill that talks about paying for teachers whose students achieve a score of 3 or more at the AP test, and I'd ask you to at least look at that. Perhaps the college boards or someone can show you where those 3s are currently distributed. Before you initiate that, because it'll help give you some idea as to what you're paying for, what you already have, and what you may want to really achieve and give incentive to. I would suspect, I might be wrong, but I would suspect that in some of the communities where college has not been the dominant culture, that they're going to find fewer of those 3s existing as a baseline, and progress might be a better measure than just the attainment of the score. And then the final piece, consistency. We talked about minuscule and acceptance of the scores, and I'd really encourage the consistency in stating the expectations for the parents and the students as to what it means when you reach and what the reward is. And if there's any way we can get agreement on that, K-16 or P-16, I think that's really a worthy goal to pursue. I had one comment that came up as we were talking about the basic skills tests and the movement to grades 9, 10, and 11. But that's different from what I've been talking about. Mr. Chairman, may I make that comment now? Very quickly. I support that, but with caution. Grade 11 is late in that high school experience for remediation for those who miss on that math test. I was asked the other day, name-dropping my term by the governor, and the answer is, well, we're going to have to start at grades K1, 2, and 3 and move quickly if we're going to have competency grade 11 without a net. So we need to walk very aggressively on our part, and I hope, if I might be so to say cautiously on everyone else's part in implementing that to make sure that we don't create something that we can't live with after it's there. But nevertheless, I support that. I work very hard to make that happen. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Superintendent Drew. Mr. Masters, if you can hang, maybe sit in back. We'll call you up if we have any questions. We have two more people who've asked to testify. So with Ms. Elsweiger, Education Minnesota. Ms. Elsweiger.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Elsweiger, Education Minnesota. And I'm not going to debate the merits of the testing and the programs. I think that some of those are good ideas. I do want to talk to you, though, about the implementation of some of them. First of all, the AP stipend is a real problem. This is really contrary to what you're doing with the QComp, where you're talking about the QComp and collaboration, working together, professional development, where this singles out individual teachers for payments of a stipend. If I were a 12th grade AP teacher and I got the stipend, I would guess that some of my colleagues at the 11th, 10th, 9th, and 8th grade level would say, what about the work that I did to teach this child social studies? You will hear from superintendents, teachers, this is not necessarily a good idea, and so we would oppose that portion of it. And then as far as the other testing provisions, the CLEP program may be very good. So we would ask you to seriously consider the funding of that in terms of staffing. If you want to use these test results and work with kids to help them be successful, you should consider the ratio of counselors to students that we have in the state. Minnesota has the second largest in the entire country ratio of students to counselors. They are very overworked. And this CLEP, I believe, could be given 6 times per year. They already have a number of other tests. So if you implement this, I believe you really need to fund, give some additional funding for school counselors.
Thank you, Ms. Elsweiger. Cindy Christ. Ms. Christ, welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Cindy Christ. I'm System Director for P16 Collaboration for the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities. I want to speak to two primary things in the bill. First, I want to let you know that MNSCU strongly supports the idea of the E-Pass, and we want to applaud the Governor and the Department of Education for this commitment. We think it's an important and useful approach to measuring student progress toward college readiness. Some of our institutions have successfully used college placement tests with high school students for the same purpose, but the Explore and Plan tests were specifically designed to test 8th and 10th graders and measure their progress towards college readiness. And therefore, we think it would likely do a better job of that than the college placement tests. We do, though, have concerns about one aspect of the legislation relative to AP and IB. It's not that our institutions don't support advanced placement and international baccalaureate programs as an important and valuable way for students to take rigorous courses in high school. We have a system policy governing the awarding of credits for both. In AP, it specifies it sets a score of three basically as the floor. It does provide, as do policies of the University of Wisconsin system, the University of Minnesota system, private colleges, just about any of the policies we've looked at, for some options in some disciplines for scores to be set at a higher level. When that happens, it's because the faculty in those disciplines have assessed the scores, the level of learning, and in equating it to their college courses have seen that a score of 4 or 5 is more appropriate. In some cases, also, the setting of higher scores reflects demands of professional associations that accredit particular programs. I think this is especially the case in science. So we don't have a problem at all with encouraging AP and IB, but we do have a concern about the setting in statute of scores that we would be required to recognize. That would lock us into a single means of awarding credit despite any changes in the tests, in courses, and in programs. It's also our belief that our Board of Trustees rightly has the authority to determine the basis upon which our colleges and universities award credits. This latter point would apply to the setting of PLET scores as well. We also are concerned about the specification that we award credit for IB scores of 3 or higher. We believe in looking at institutional practice in Minnesota, and I'm talking again about the University of Minnesota and private colleges as well as our institutions, and across the country, that in at least many disciplines, the score of 3 may be too low to ensure college-level learning. We're not quite sure, we don't know what process the Department of Ed used to set the score of 3, but we believe it may be too low in many cases, and we'd like that to be reconsidered. The final point that I would make is that we believe that PSEO, including concurrent enrollment, offers a strong and effective means of providing high school students with college-level learning, and we'd like to see it more fully recognized in this package of approaches to improving student learning. An array of studies, which I won't begin to try to cite today, has yielded such findings as that PSEO students on average earn higher college and university grade point averages than the students who didn't take PSEO, have higher college going rates than non-PSEO students, and on other measures outperform students who didn't participate in PSEO. Similar data exists in other states. I'm not suggesting that this is different than AP or IB. I'm guessing that it's pretty much the same. But that is my point. PSEO is an option that's currently in place that many of you, in your wisdom, have continued to support. We also think that one of the advantages of concurrent enrollment offered through PSEO is that it offers high school teachers with valuable professional development opportunities that broadly impact high school teaching and learning beyond concurrent enrollment classes. And the relationships between high schools and colleges developed through concurrent enrollment provide many benefits for students and faculty. All public post-secondary institutions in Minnesota accept credits through PSEO and transfer. In recent efforts to ensure and demonstrate that high-quality standards are used in concurrent enrollment courses, should, we believe, improve the acceptance of these credits by private and non-Minnesota institutions. So we believe investing more fully in PSEO in all its forms would have significant benefit for Minnesota students as a part of this package. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ms. Chris, members, we have about 5 more minutes of questioning. I have a list of 4 questioners at this point. Make that 5. If your question is to a member of the department or to the author of the bill, if you could simply say pass and know that we will get to your question. We do have the room reserved for after session, all right? But if your question is for one of the testifiers who probably won't be back after session, then please feel free to ask. So, in order, Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Actually, my question is to the department, so I will wait, but I will at least take a few seconds to say, Representative Clinton, that I really like your bill, and I can quibble with some of the issues, some of them have been brought up here, but I do think this is reform, and I think the reform is about creating opportunity through a culture of high expectations for a whole bunch of students where opportunities currently don't exist. So I look forward to working with you to shape this bill. But, Mr. Chair, I'd like to reserve my cue, if I will, for a question later for the department.
Consider it reserved. Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have some questions for the department, but the one that I will ask today is for Dr. Giroux.
Representative Kyle.
Thank you, Madam Chair, or Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair. Ms. Chris and yourself referred to the, you know, what I think Representative Mariani is pinpointing as one of the things we need to talk about to perfect this bill, which I agree has a lot of wonderful possibilities as well. and that's a score of 3 or more, and we heard from Ms. Chris that it perhaps is too high from the college standpoint, and you were, however, referring to perhaps it's too, or they were saying it was too low. You were saying it was too high to enable the low-income students, which this bill seems to target for funding, if prioritization of the funding, it might be too high for them, however, with the score, to be able to have their fees paid. So could you tell us more of what you know about that?
Superintendent Chabrou.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Granning, I think that the score of 3 has been accepted by a great many of the institutions, 4 by some. I think that's correct. Consistency on that? No. Testimony to say we have higher standards and therefore we want a 4, higher standards, we want a 5, and the private institutions make sense as public institutions. Reaching for some consistency in those definitions seems to make sense to me. As a parent or as a taxpayer, as a citizen, it would seem like we need to have a clear understanding and definition of that. And I think that would help. I think that the post-secondary option is a viable and livable program in Minnesota that's working, but it's not the only way that a student should be able to earn that college credit, and yet if you say this is the only way you're going to do it, we need to enhance it, and it has to be a 4 or a 5, and you're really reinforcing a model that says the only way your high school experience works is when you finally get into college or if you choose to come early on a post-secondary option. I'm not real comfortable with that. But 3s have generally been accepted in some of the schools, particularly private schools, of not all of them, but they'll want a 4 or higher for that score. Can I tag on a counseling line as well? I was at a meeting the other day, Mr. Chairman, at the meeting the other day with perhaps from Minneapolis-St. Paul. We report ours at about 1 to 550, 1 to 600 students for a high school counselor. St. Paul said 1 to 450, and Minneapolis had said 1 to over 900. That is not where folks are going to be able to go unless they have an appointment several years in advance to get the kinds of advice they need. They've got to come up with alternative systems.
Representative Cryon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't think I was clear enough in my question, or maybe I heard something that you didn't say, but I thought you were commenting on the fact that if it was a 3, then without looking at value added, their low-income students wouldn't be as apt to get their fees paid.
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. I was referring to the teacher compensation component in which the teacher would be awarded compensation based on the number of students who scored a 3. And I'm suggesting that that has an inherent bias that probably ought to be examined with data before we go there. I'm sorry.
Representative Hammer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can pass the lead.
All right. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We have a Pioneer Press article here, and it talks about how much the concern of remedial education in the colleges. And I'm wondering from the independent, those representing the independent groups, Mr. Masters, if or others who might be able to answer this, who won't be back tonight, if there's any research or any information available with regard to how many of these students who need remedial education at the college level, how many of them have in fact passed or failed the basic skills test. Is there any analysis on that basis? Any looking into that and see if there's a connection between passing or failing the basic skills test and needing any kind of remedial education later?
Masters.
Mr. Chair and committee, I just can speak from a local viewpoint. St. Louis Park, we generally graduate all of our students. They pass the basic skills except for individual education plans that would have them exempt. Some students don't graduate because they don't fulfill credit, but up to this point, with the exception, I think, of last year, since the inception of basic skills, we've been able to graduate students based on the passage of that test, not talking about credit fulfillment. In terms of remediation at college, one of the things that we're looking at is developing a program where we would pull our students out 3 years beyond 12th grade, which is a feat in itself, just to keep that kind of database, but we are looking at that as feedback from a 360 viewpoint of looking at those students after. So I would say we're in the process. I'm not sure where other districts would be. We're a small district, but we really want to meet the needs of all students. One of the things I didn't include, and I see Mr. Lass is here, is we are an international baccalaureate school. We are completing our third year. That increased enrollment in that is continuing. There are many students in that as well who don't do the diploma, but they do certificate. So over the last 5 years with the AP as well as IB, just inside of St. Louis Park, which is a small high school, we have about 650 kids in grades 11 and 12, we have students participating at about a 60 to 70% level inside of AP and IB, either taking certificate courses or AP level courses. So what our role would be is to increase more folks from the levels of poverty and kids of poverty, or kids of color. So from that, to get back to your piece, whether there's data or not, I am not aware of it. It's certainly something that we're looking at locally after a post 360 type of survey over a three-year period.
Representative Olson, let's follow up with that more in depth with the department this afternoon. All right. Representative Lax.
I'll pass.
Representative Dabney.
Pass.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Masters. Thank you to our testifiers, members. At this time, I'm prepared to recess the meeting. Please listen on the House floor for when we will meet after House session. Members, this meeting stands in recess.